you. The recording has started. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Shall I do the roll call for you, Michele?
Oh, please, James. You do a much better job than I do.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings on the 17th of May. And on this call, we have Alan Greenberg, Michele Nilon, Sherry Falco, Matt Schneller, Randy Ferguson, Brian Beckham, Gabriella Schlack, Hazel Shah, Jonathan Tenenbaum, and for staff, we have Margie Milam and Glenda Sangeville. We have apologies from Luke Schiffer, Juan Manuel Rojas, David Maher, and Victoria McEverdy. May I just ask you to remember to say your name before you speak for transcription purposes. Lisa Garano has just joined the call. Thank you very much, Michele. Over to you.
Thank you, Glenn. As always, it's a joy to be on calls with you. Don't we all love the ICANN staff? They're great. I love the European ICANN staff. Yay. They work really long hours. You have to appreciate that. They're on calls at all times of the day and the night. And no, we're not sucking up to them. This is just something I think they're underappreciated at times. Just as a point of order before we go any further, we had renamed this working group to a slightly shorter name, which was less of a mouthful and less likely to hurt my tongue or that of anybody else. So, UDRP domain name lock. Was that the short version we decided on, Alan?
I thought we decided on something even shorter, but that's what Marika has there, so she's probably right.
I thought it was just UDRP lock, wasn't it? Or domain lock or something.
Could be. I thought shorter, but I'd have to go back and look at.
Well, okay, we can look. Okay, rather than wasting 10 minutes arguing about this, what I would say is that just for the sake of brevity and our own sanity, if you want to refer to it as something like the UDRP lock group or the locking group or anything along those lines, that's kind of clear, that's perfectly okay, and I wouldn't expect anybody to refer to it by that incredibly long and only barely pronounceable title. So that's all.
And then we need to come up with an acronym for it, preferably obscene.
Oh, of course. Of course. But I think we need at least three acronyms. I think we had agreed previously in other working groups, Alan, that if you did not produce at least three new acronyms within a working group, you had failed. Although that was never incorporated into the working group guidelines. The ULWG. Now, see, the problem, Margie, with that is that my alma mater was University of Limerick, which is UL, and it's the only two-letter .ie domain name, so that would cause all sorts of headaches for me as well. I'd start thinking about university. But thanks, it's a good try. Anyway, moving swiftly on. On the SOI front, has anybody got any changes? Oh, good morning, Mr. Tenenbaum and Ms. Anderson. Has anybody got any changes to their SOIs? Going once? Going twice? No? Okay, fine. Moving on. As you know, of course, I wasn't on the call last week, and I believe Alan did a wonderful job of what's the polite term, Alan? Looking after you? Looking after you, or cat herding, or something. Beg your pardon? Facilitating. You can tell there's a lot of lawyers on this call. You're coming up with much better terms much faster. I'm impressed. Though my poor head will probably explode. There was a lot of emails backwards and forwards on the mailing list afterwards, which is great. And there's some emails that I think are up on the screen here from Luke, and there was also quite a few emails from John Berryhill. John Berryhill hasn't dialed in today, has he, ladies?
Not yet.
Okay. So have you all had a look over the emails between Luke and John and other people? I wish Luke was on the call because he could possibly explain things further, but he's done a very good job. I came back from wherever I was and felt like I was getting a crash course in UDRP. It was great. Any questions or any issues raised by any of those emails that anybody wishes to discuss? That was from John, not from Luke. God damn it, I can't work out emails. Sorry.
It's Alan. I'm not going to really discuss substance, but some of the content really is off topic for us.
And okay, so such as?
I think we want to make sure not to go down paths as we're using this kind of thing. I mean, issues like what's on my screen right now of the UDRP, it treats respondents different from... whatever the other name is of interest and relevant, but not to us.
Okay, good point. Thank you, Alan. Anybody else want to raise any other points in relation to this? Okay. Just always bear in mind, I think, you know, it's a pity John isn't on the call, because that actually was from John, not from Luke, and it just shows how tired I must be if I'm misreading emails. John goes into quite some detail over a course of several emails about a lot of stuff to do with explaining how the UDRP works and how it doesn't work and everything else. But, as Alan says, we have to be careful that we don't get out of scope. If John joins the call, maybe we can come back to that. Now, the other thing is, moving on to the next item on our agenda here, the outreach. The outreach questions to both registrars and UDRP providers. I'm waiting for that to load. Sorry. Where is that? Latest version. I can't see the latest version. Does somebody have a copy of this latest version? Because the link I'm getting up there takes me to a next meeting and not to the... Okay, fine. Sorry. Okay, has anybody got any issues with the questions that have been that are there on this draft document? Any feedback, any queries, any thoughts?
Michele, this is Brian. I'm apologize, I'm at the train station. The train is just pulling up, so there might be some background noise, but I think
that's okay.
Maybe I'll hold on just 1 minute to speak.
Okay, Sherry, go ahead.
Hi. I thought the questions were actually great and thorough and really tried to get at some of the same information from different angles, depending on who was answering. I think that's a really wise idea. The one question, and it might be actually off topic, so I welcome that feedback as well, but I was curious. I noticed at the very end of the questionnaire there was lots of interesting questions around percentages of times certain things occur. And I was just curious if we wanted to add to this questionnaire something regarding if something is in a UDRP and then gets somehow transferred, not to that complainant party, but to somebody else. Say somebody actually was a cyber squatter and the original party brought the UDRP, but during that process, even though there were locks in place, somehow that registrant had sold that name to some unsuspecting third party. And I'm just curious if that's relevant to the UDRP process locks or if it's completely irrelevant. I'm happy not to include it. But I think that could be a risk to sort of the bona fide third-party purchaser that they've bought something because they didn't understand the locking system or whatever the case might be. And I'm wondering if that's something we want to add to this inquiry or completely not. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any comments on that? I'm going to put myself on the queue as well. Alan, go ahead.
Sorry, this is Brian again.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Brian. Sorry, we'll let Brian go, but he's in a weird position.
Sure. Sorry, I'm on the train now. I apologize if there's some background noise, but I think probably a preliminary question we had was, what was the intended outcome from these questions? If it was just an information gathering exercise, that's perfectly all right. I think probably it was just a question as to what we were hoping to get out of this. And the reason I ask that is because, and I understand these questions were just sort of spit out maybe as a conversation starter, but looking at these from the provider perspective, quite frankly, a lot of these questions involve information that would either be questions that are directed at a registrar or a complainant, or would be something that for which there were simply no statistics. Obviously, we could provide some anecdotal feedback in terms of our sort of best guess as to what the answers to the questions might be. But I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, if we understand what's the intended outcome from these questions, that might help us to shape the questions a bit better in terms of getting at the intended output that we're looking for.
Okay. Anybody want to speak to that? I presume he's still listening to our answers.
Yeah, sorry, I'm still here. I just will put the phone on mute if I'm not talking, so I don't provide a lot of background noise. And I'm happy to go through those questions one by one if that's useful as well, or if we want to just maybe think a little bit about what we're looking or hoping to get out of these questions. Maybe, like I say, that'll help us shape these questions a bit more before they are actually sent out to the various stakeholder groups or the registrars or the providers.
Okay. Then the one comment I was going to add, which was why I put myself in the queue, is that I thought that a couple of the questions were kind of moot, because if a domain is locked, then it's locked, so you can't transfer it. So it's not even a question of it being rejected. It just can't be locked. It can't be transferred. But we can come back to these. We might go back to these in a minute. Alan, go ahead, please.
A couple of comments. First of all, I think we need to be careful in this group of defining what transfer means. Transfer in the normal sense of ICANN is transfer between registrars. And if we're talking about transferring to a different registrant, it's not really a transfer. So I think we need to be careful that we know what we're talking about. The reason I raised my hand is, in general, I found that these kind of questionnaires, we have to go through an iteration where we at least get a couple of people to answer them, perhaps people within this group, and that will, the answers will then tell us to some extent which questions are confusingly worded, which questions are not likely to yield any real results. So I think we want to go through an iteration of to the extent we can, people within this group answering, going through the process of answering the questions and then the group looking at the answers.
Thanks, Alan. That's a very good point. I mean, we've seen this in other working groups where, you know, we work over questions and then as soon as we send them out, we realize that we've worded them awkwardly or we've made a strange choice of words which we weren't aware of, and this has gone down
the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, there's the other thing. And the thing about the transfers, in another working group I'm involved with, we're dealing with transfers in the kind of the much broader issue about, you know, the change of registrant, change of control, change of holder, change of, insert your favorite term here. It's a very, very valid point. So let's maybe just have, it's good to have some work. I mean, Gabriella is saying that, you know, it's a good idea to have some workers test the questions. I think it's a very, very valid valid point. Now, as a registrar, I couldn't possibly answer the questions for the UDRP service providers, but as a registrar, I can always try to answer the ones addressed to registrars. Change transfer to more words or change. Okay. Okay, so let's actually look at some of the questions here and see if we can see if there's any of the wording. So Laurie's also volunteered. Thank you, Laurie, to answer them. So, okay, the first bit's at the top, whether the creation of an outline of proposed procedure which a complainant must follow in order for registered physician to maintain that, okay. Whether the creation of an outline of the steps of the process, whether the creation of an outline of the steps of the process we reasonably expect to take place during an UDRP dispute would be desirable. Okay. Whether the time frame by which a registrar must lock a domain after a UDRP has been filed should be standardized.
I'm sorry, this is Brian again. I'm not on the Adobe, so I can't raise my hand, so I hope it's okay if I just...
No, it's okay, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I guess if we're going to look through the charter questions first, the first question there about whether the creation of an outline for proposed procedure, et cetera, I guess probably it's been our understanding as a provider that the lock wouldn't normally be triggered until a provider would notify the complaint, and that would be under rules 4A and 4C. And then that also interplays a little bit with question 4A, whether what constitutes a lock domain name should be defined. And there's an interplay between paragraph 2E of the rules and paragraph 3, 7, and 8 of the UDRP. So maybe it's just worth thinking about those questions sort of in tandem in terms of what the lock means and at what point that's triggered and under what circumstances.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, one thing I was going to suggest is to try and look at this in terms of very, very simple English where possible, because even though I've been involved in this particular working group since it was the drafting team, I'm still reading parts of this and my eyes are glazing over. And it would be nice that people actually understood what we were asking quickly. The first few ones there around the definition and everything else. Okay, fine. Looking at the registrar questions, the first one, do you lock domain names during UDRP proceedings? As a registrar personally, my main problem there is, what is a lock? I mean, we have to answer that one first, I think. So maybe that should be the first question. I don't know. What do other registrars think about that question? Jonathan, I'll pick on you. Alan, go ahead.
Well, I'm not a registrar, but I thought that the intent of this question is to try to get to a survey of what people think is a lock right now. Because quite conceivably, if you look at questions 1 and 2, you can get a yes answer to 1 and quite different answers to 2, and I thought that's part of the information collection we're doing. Maybe I misunderstood the intent. So I don't think if we define it ahead of time, we may not find out what people are currently doing right now.
Well, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Part of my role, Alan, is to make stupid comments so that you can help me make me sound more intelligent.
And vice versa.
Exactly. No, that's fine. That's good logic there. But I will still continue to pick on Jonathan. Jonathan? It's very quiet. You there? Okay, Jonathan's not answering. Laurie's put on the chat, should we define the ideal lock? So, Laurie, do you mean that as a replacement for the concept of just simply defining a lock? Is that what you mean, or is this something else? Laurie?
This is Brian again. I don't know if what Laurie's after maybe would be, like I mentioned earlier, there's an interplay between different of the rules and the paragraphs in the procedure. So, for example, you have one paragraph which requires the registrars to maintain the status quo. In another paragraph, you're there's a provision whereby registrants would be permitted to make updates to the contact information. So if that's the intent behind Lori's question, then I think that probably would be worth exploring a little bit more in terms of what's intended by the lock that we're after.
Okay. Thank you.
Lori says she can't talk. I presume she's tried star 7 on this one to unlock, to unmute.
I assume there's nothing wrong with her line. Glenn? Oh, okay. She thinks it's her phone. Okay. Right. And Jonathan has ignored me studiously. Volker, are you able to speak?
I think I can speak. It's shared.
Oh, you can speak. Go ahead.
I think it works. No. I was just wondering if you're testing the line.
Oh, no. The problem we're having is that Laurie Anderson is typing stuff into the chat. Brian and a couple of other people are only dialed in, so they can't see it unless I read it. So Laurie is saying, okay, she can't talk. Volker's talking about updates, breaking them up. As you got A, contact data update, B, transfer. I'm not too sure what he means by transfer, what he means transfer of holder or what. C, delete. That's a question mark. Laurie thinks it's her phone. Matt is asking, oh, it's a registrant transfer. Thanks for clarification, Volker. Matt is saying, do questions 8 to 11 get at these definitional issues? And then Laurie's talking about, I'm thinking prevention of cancellation transfer, expiration, change of registrant. So, Laurie, is that what your ideal lock would be? Prevention, it would be one that would prevent cancellation, transfer, expiration, or change of registrant.
Michaela, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. No, thank you, because I thought there for a moment that I was talking to myself, which I generally only do when I'm not in the office. So transfer of owner would be owner change, according to Volker. Okay, and I'll be evil and ask you, which ICANN policy covers an owner change, Volker? I'm not expecting an answer to that one, because there isn't one.
It's Alan, I have a partial answer to that one.
Okay.
As I understand it, there is nothing that ICANN can do to stop a change from a registrant essentially selling the asset to someone else, unless it's in the registrar-registrant agreement that they can't. All we can do is say you can't change who is.
Yeah. Michaela, I mean, yeah, that you'd probably be right. Matt, go ahead.
I was basically going to say the same thing that Alan just said, but I was also going to add that one of the reasons why I sort of set up the questions to just ask about current practice, and maybe we have a second round here, depending on the information that we get back, after we sort of answer these questions internally, see how they need to be tweaked and changed to work better. Once we have this background information on what is currently happening, maybe it makes sense to go back with some additional questions about sort of what the ideal might be once we have sort of a working knowledge of what everyone's doing. If what everyone's doing ends up being essentially the same, maybe that ends up being our ideal full stop.
Okay. Thank you.
Michaela, it's Alan.
Go ahead.
I think what we wanted of this is in questions to registrars, we want to ask them what they're doing. And in questions to the providers or to intellectual property people who are bringing the UDRPs up, ask them what they would like to see.
I guess we could also ask registrars, you know, if you could do something else, what would you do? But I'm, you know, registrars are sort of the guy in the middle at this point, and it's not clear that they have a particular desire to do one thing or another, other than to meet the contractual agreements. But from the registrant who's starting a UDRP, or from the providers, they're the ones that we want to ask, you know, if you were king, what would you do, or what would you require? So I think the slant is different depending on which questions we're talking about and who they're addressed to.
That's a very valid point.
One extra thought. This is Matt. One benefit that we may get from asking the UDRP service providers what they're currently seeing happening in the real world rather than how they would like it to work, is that we may get a slightly different response set from, I don't know, my guess is that the registrars who are going to respond are probably going to be the registrars who are acting in a pretty responsible, routine manner, whereas the UDRP service providers may see a little bit more of a broader scope of registrar behavior than the folks who are likely to respond to a stakeholder group inquiry request.
That's a good point, Alan speaking.
Okay. Just a Volker has suggested rewording the first question to registrars, and Volker has suggested, do you lock, and if so, how?
And when, I presume.
Well, he didn't say that, so I'm not going to assume anything. And Volker is usually pretty precise, so. That's interesting. Laurie's saying as well that regard to a change of registrant, 8A allows this as long as the new holder agrees to be bound by the decision of the provider. Volker agrees, and deletion is also possible according to the rules, provided the complainant can take over / restore at the same conditions as those of the respondent. That's from Volker as well. Okay. What do people think of? Okay, here's the full text that Volker is suggesting for question one to registrars. Full text number one, do you lock domain names during UDRP proceedings, and if so, how? As opposed to, what I think Volker is talking about then is we remove question two. Question two and question one become a single entity. You merge them. Thoughts? Feedback? Laurie likes the idea?
It's Alan speaking. Does the question how, is that going to come up with a really definitive answer? Since the registrar is the one who has custody of all the information, they might lock something by simply refusing to accept updates, and I'm not sure, you know, that's not equivalent to an EPP defined thing, which is well defined.
No, but it does have the same impact, though, doesn't it?
It might.
It does.
How? I'm not sure it's going to give enough specificity.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
What is being locked? If they're doing it purely within their own systems.
Okay, Volker wants to speak. Volker, go ahead.
Okay, maybe we could expand that even more. How do you define lock? And then we leave two in. That would even work as well. So you ask him if you lock, and what do they define as a lock in a supplemental text answer. And then you can ask two, what kind of mechanisms you have to implement that which you define as a lock.
Okay. Alan?
No, sorry.
This is Brian again.
My hand isn't up. No, I think we're getting closer to what we want. The comments in the chat seem to be homing in on recognizing that if we just use simple words, we may not get the answer we need.
Okay, so maybe what we need to do then is just what I would suggest. I'm trying to synthesize this. We ask a simple question and have an explanation afterwards. So a simple question as worded by Volker: do you lock domain names during UDRP proceedings, and if so, how? And then, you know, please provide details of, you know, which EPP locks and or other mechanisms you use, et cetera, et cetera. Would that work, maybe?
I think we're getting closer. We have to make sure, and I'd like to hear from staff, that we're asking questions which can be reasonably summarized and processed.
Margie?
Yeah, I think, this is Margie, I think that would work. And I don't see any problems in summarizing with those questions.
Okay. So, I mean, for me as a registrar, Margie and Alan, you know, if I can't understand the question I'm being asked very, very quickly and easily, if it's not a simple question, I probably don't want to answer it. Because if I misunderstood the question, I'm going to have problems. The simpler the language, the better. And the other thing as well is that, you know, short surveys with a limited number of questions will probably get more replies. If you send people a very, very long survey, then nobody is going to answer the damn thing. I think four vendors have sent me questionnaires this week. I've clicked on the link, gone to it, and been told that it would take me 45 minutes to answer the questionnaire. as none of the vendors had the common sense to offer me a big shiny object for answering the questionnaire, and by shiny object I'm talking something that I might actually want, or an Amazon voucher or something, I closed the window and didn't bother. Okay then. Volker suggests that we lie about the length of the questionnaire. Yes, Volker, as ever, comes up with very practical solutions. Thank you, Volker. Remind me never to register a domain name through you. Oh, damn, I already did. Never mind. I know, I'm only joking. Laurie's suggestion would be that the questions should be yes and no's. Or is it we should expect a yes or a no? I'm not too sure what she means. Laurie, could you explain what you mean by the yes or no thing? Sorry, I'm having difficulty following.
Yes, sorry. I was just thinking if we say, you know, if we ask the question, do you lock the domain, and then say, do you prevent, and then list the different types of locks or what you're actually preventing with your lock.
Okay. So you give a list of all the possible things, and it's yes, no, yes, no, yes, no.
Right, and then that way, then we get the answers that we want.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying, and apologies for being sick. Sorry, I've no excuse because it's 3:30 in the afternoon, so I've no excuse whatsoever. Mass, please go ahead.
I was going to suggest maybe I just reorder this a little bit to group these questions a little bit. Questions number 3 through 7 are essentially timing questions. Questions 8 through 11 are essentially definitional issues. How is, you know, what is a lock to you? And then 12 and 13 are sort of conclusion resolution things. If it would be helpful to throw in some subtitles and just sort of group these so people can visually track what's going on in what section of the questionnaire. Maybe that'll help it flow a little bit better.
Okay. Ms. Michele, I agree. Make it easy for people. You're more likely to get replies. Just actually one stupid question that sprung to mind. While there are a very large number of registrars, how many UDRP service providers are there? I mean, I thought there's only like 3 or 4. Am I missing something? There's WIPO, there's that other lot, the National Forum, and there's the Czech lot. Who else is there? NAF and WIPO. Who's ADN-DRC? Is that the Czech course? Or is that something else? Oh, Asian, okay. And this officially is also the Czech one. So you're literally looking at, so you're basically looking at 4 or 5 UDRP service providers. So it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect 100% reply from them. Whereas you're not going to get anything close to that in terms of the other side. No, it's just something just that crossed my mind. Okay, the bulk of, based on the chat I'm seeing here, just for the record, for those who are dialed in, the Volker and Laurie and Jonathan were confirming which providers were involved, and Volker was saying that most of them are coming, most of the complaints they get are via WIPO or NAF. The others don't really contribute. Speaking personally, I think we've only ever had WIPO and NAF. That's why I wasn't even sure who the other providers were. Anything else on that? Do we all agree with the concept of adding little headings for the various sections? I'll take silence to mean yes. I presume we would not be sending the questions aimed at UDRP service providers to the registrars, that we'd have two different questionnaires. Was that the idea? Yeah, Margie, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to back up. Where did we end up on number one? Can you clarify where we are, number one and number two? I just want to make sure I've got the instructions correct.
Okay, sorry. My understanding, and I'm waiting, and Alan or somebody can contradict me, is that we would try to use the kind of simplified language that was proposed by Volker with the kind of the list concept from Laurie, I think.
Okay, that's what I thought. Laurie's, what is the list? Is it everything that was in the chat that Laurie sent out, or is there something else?
I think everything that's in the chat. If there's any additions that we need, I think you'd need to add something about account change. What else is there that you need to add? Laurie, are there any other types of lock that you would want to add in there?
I think that probably, I mean, and I'm not sure how other registrars do it, but an account change, if you can't make any changes to the domain name, an account change shouldn't happen. If it does happen, as long as the registrant doesn't change, it shouldn't matter, because it's the registrant that's the responsible party.
Okay.
The ones that I listed are the ones that we prevent. If there's something that is allowed under the UDRP, then if they're like with the change of registered name holder, and somebody wants to change that, then they would have to agree to be bound by the in writing to be bound by the decision of the provider.
Okay. And Gabrielle also made the suggestion they can add an other option. So if there's some other kind of lock that we haven't thought of, or then to put it in there, you never know, there might be something else. Is that, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, regarding that last comment, isn't the requirement to accept UDRP decisions part of all registration agreements? So anyone taking over a registration implicitly agrees to that?
Good question. Laurie?
I'm assuming it's one of the things that registrars have to put in the agreement.
Yes, but if there is a if there's a private sale, you know, between two registered name holders, it depends on whether or not the registrar, when the customer can, if the customer does a change of account, whether the registrar requires them to agree to the registration agreement. I would think that they would.
I would assume that part of any registration agreement is that if you transfer the it's not ownership, but if you transfer the rights to this domain name, that the new person has to abide by them. I would assume that's a boilerplate in any agreement.
Alan.
If not, we have a real big problem.
Alan, there you are, being assuming things. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jonathan here. And just to kind of echo those same comments by Alan, I mean, it should be the part of any registrar's agreement with the registrants that any transfer or sale of the rights, and right, there was a good distinction between rights and ownership, but there as well. But yeah, any transfer of the rights should require the new registrant to have to assume, you know, the responsibility of adhering to the terms of service, terms and conditions, and that should be part of. It's on the registrars to make sure that that's part of their T's and C's, but you know that should be part of the process. As I make a note to make sure that ours cover that, but yeah, that's where that should be covered.
If it's Alan speaking, if that isn't the case today, that registrars are required by the RAA to put that in a registration agreement, that would be a barn door that's I think someone would have noticed was open a long time ago.
Yeah, no, agreed. I'm almost positive without saying that I'm positive that the ICANN, the accreditation agreement would put the responsibility on the registrars to for adherence to any UDRP decision and that kind of thing. So that pushes the responsibility to the registrars to make sure that their terms cover the their registrants so that they're adhering to those terms, which it's somewhat of a pass through, so that they would have to be responsible to adhere to any UDRP decision.
Okay. Alan?
No, I'm nothing more to add at that point.
Okay, perfect. All right. Just keeping an eye on the time here. We've got about just over 10 minutes to go. Right. The other questions there for the registrars: do you lock a domain name upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant, i.e. where the complainant copies the registrar on an email serving the complaint on the registrant and UDRP dispute service provider? I think that's pretty clear as a question personally. Does anybody have any issues with that question? No? Moving on. Question number four, what does the if so... Okay, so if so, question number four is refers to question number three. Okay, right, sorry, I'm just reading that and just thinking about what. So that's a follow-up for question number three. Okay, question number five. Does your website list an email address that UDRP complainants should use to send you a copy of UDRP complaints? That's pretty straightforward. Number six, do you lock a domain name upon receipt of notice of commencement from the UDRP dispute service provider? Again, that looks pretty straightforward. And again, a follow-up. If so, what is the median amount of time it takes you to impose the domain name lock from receipt of email notice from the UDRP dispute provider? Actually, one thing I would add there is I would remove the reference to email. I would make it just receipt of notice as opposed to email notice. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I agree with that. But shouldn't six be asking, do you lock it after receipt of notice of commencement from the UDRP provider, if not already locked? Because otherwise, people who have locked it already will say no to that, and that will be somewhat misleading.
That's a very valid point. Thank you, Alan. That makes sense.
It, of course, is possible they use two different kinds of locks at two different times, but I'm not sure we can ask that level of depth.
I'm not sure we want to.
Well,
I'm not sure we could even answer it, even if we did ask it.
Really, this whole set of questions is trying to get at, tell us your current practice regarding UDRP and locking.
Yes.
But if we ask it in such an unstructured way, we will not easily be able to analyze the results.
We have to ask it in a structured fashion. We have to ask it in a fashion that we actually get the right answers. Sorry, not the right answers. That sounds wrong. You have to get the answers that are... Oh, bugger. How do I word this? You get the answers that are correct and describe the situation accurately. Getting my words mixed up. Margie and then Jonathan.
Yes, I just wanted to have Alan clarify what change you wanted at the end of question four. I didn't get it.
No, it's a question six is okay. What I was talking about. Do you lock the domain name upon receipt of notice of commitments from the UDRP dispute service provider, if not already locked?
Oh, okay, got it.
I'm not sure where that phrase should go, but somewhere in that sentence.
Thank you.
Jonathan.
Yeah, and this is Jonathan. I mean, the way that I looked at the questions was sort of like the first grouping was to really pin down the timing of the lock by the registrars, and then the second grouping was to, you know, really get into some more of the detail as to the actual the type of lock and what the restrictions on the lock would, what those restrictions that would be basically put on the domains pursuant to the locks that are put on there, you know. And at least that's so, you know, I think that was at least how I was looking at the way we were structuring the questions, at least for the first and sort of second grouping. And you know, just trying to make sure that in that first section then when we were really trying to pin down the timing, like, do you lock upon complaint, do you lock upon notice of the commencement of the action versus a complaint of from the complainant, that kind of thing. And then as we got into the second grouping of questions, it was, you know, what restrictions are placed on the domains pursuant to the lock that's put on. So I think we were just trying to talk about what we were really looking to get at. I mean, that's at least how I was viewing what we were doing with these first two groups of questions.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
It strikes me that maybe we should be asking the questions just the way you just said that, of when, if ever, do you lock a domain name during a UDRP process, and, you know, what impact does that lock have, or how do you perform the lock, and what impact does it have? Do we need to ask a whole bunch of questions if really that's all we're trying to get at?
I guess my thing with that, and this is Jonathan again, and the you know, my issue there is that when you, and to some of what Michaela was talking about earlier, where, you know, people want to fill this out quickly and just answer yes or no questions. I think if we are putting a more open-ended question that requires, you know, a little bit more effort on the part of the registrars to actually lay out what their process is and then what the lock does, I think that the two issues there are, one, it may impact the response, the amount, and the responses that we get, and then number two, if we have to go through and then kind of parse through the responses to summarize them in a way, and there are some sort of distinctions and nuances, and a lot of them, I think there could be a lot more work on the back end to kind of synthesize, put together all the answers. At least
was
how I viewed it.
Yeah, when I just asked the question, I guess I was imagining a multiple choice answer of, you know, you lock it when you get the notice from the complainant, you knock it on notice of commencement from the UDRP provider, or any other option, and then you could have an other, and that you
yep.
could fill in.
That's not a bad idea.
And the same with locks. With locks, there may be some obvious ones, and then they could fill it in. So I'm not I hadn't thought of that before, but if that's really what we're getting at, maybe we should ask it as clearly as that. I'm not sure what we will be missing if we do it that way instead of what we're looking at right now in the series of questions.
Okay. Matt?
I'll go back to sleep now.
Alan, don't do that.
So I guess the one benefit we get from asking a series of questions rather than having it a little bit more open-ended, although the
your last suggestion ended up sounding a little bit like a series of questions, or at least a series of options, which I think would get to the exact same thing. If we have it too open-ended, we may well get a response that something like, we lock it as soon as the UDRP starts, and that could mean either upon notice from the complainant or upon notice of commencement, and we won't have enough information to determine which the respondent meant. But as long as we have it broken up, whether we have it as options or a series of questions, you know, if we can send this out with some radio boxes for people to pick and vote, mm-hmm. I don't care what the mechanics are. I think that's fine. Just as long as we give a really clear set of options as to what they are.
Okay, thanks. Anything else on this? Jonathan agrees. I just found an interesting statistic, which is completely unrelated to locks, but all about UDRPs, which was something like, what is it? That only 9,000 out of a total of 220 million domain names are subject to UDRP. A tiny, tiny number. But anyway, Marjorie, go ahead.
I've put in the notes the changes. I didn't catch a change in number 7, but Matt in his chat indicated there was a change in number 7. Can you guys repeat that?
Yes, I think I suggested removing email from the sentence. It says receipt of notice.
Okay, thank you.
Because unless I'm mistaken, some of the providers can send notice in using more than one means, though I could be completely wrong.
Nick Haley, this is Brian. Just to jump in for a moment, I don't know where this statistic has come from, but and I'm not sure what it's directed towards, frankly. But I can tell you that at WIPO we've had more than 9,000 cases at WIPO alone. So I would question if that statistic is accurate. Maybe it's meant to cover a certain time period, but overall, I
oh no, it's sorry, it's the I think it's just, I was just looking at an article about 2000, I think it was 2011 was the period, and I think the statistic was from NAF only. I'll have to actually read the entire thing again carefully.
Because obviously that doesn't cover the span of the over 10 years UDRP has been offered across all providers, nor does it cover defensive registrations or registrations acquired on the open market.
Margie, go ahead.
Oh, that was a mistake. I'm lowering my hand.
Oh, okay. Right, it's 3 minutes to the top of the hour. I don't think we have time really to get into more of any of these other questions. It would not be a bad idea for people to have a look at, look over the questions and see if there's anything that they see as problematic and that needs any clarification. Try to look at it in terms of if you were the person answering this, you know, is the question clear to you? Can it be made clearer? Are we going to get back accurate answers based on the questions submitted? So we hopefully just finish this off next week. And then the next meeting is next week. So, and the notes over on the right, Margie, just to admit, yes, question 4, deleting email. Question 6 was adding, if not already locked, and again, question 7 was the same reference to email, just to confirm that. Any other questions or issues that need to be raised at this time? No? Okay, then. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Michele.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.